Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome. Good evening to another Touchline Fracker pod. This is going to be World Cup Fracker episode 7, bringing you some of that more daily content. And what a cluster of games we've got to talk about tonight. I'll be your host this evening. Well, anytime you're listening to this, Owen, aka X-Pac from NSL, I've been joined by a Star Study cast. First up, we've got someone with one of the probably the best names on Touchline Fracker, Mr. Carbaholic. Sean, how you doing?
Yeah, how you doing, bro? You all good, man? All good, all good.
Yeah, I'm just I'm good as well. Just glad that the game's delivered as per. Tops, man, how you doing?
Yo, I'm good, brother. Always good, man. Good to be on.
Always got some good energy. And last but not least, controversial Babs. How you doing?
Not too bad, man. Not too bad. I'm feeling a good mood. You know, I've got a couple of things to get off my chest. You know, a couple of French guys to talk about. You know, we'll get into it.
Trey Bienza. All right. Yeah. Well, there's no other place to start off other than the, I guess the Argentina Mexico game, which had an expected dog rating, which was very, very high. See, Mbappe's killing it at the moment at the World Cup. We'll get into it. Ronaldo's getting the win, taking food off Messi's table. What's he going to do today? We'll get into it. First, just to run through the lineup, Sean, what did you make of Scaloni's changes and kind of how the initial phase of the game played out?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, I have not watched Argentina throughout their 36-game unbeaten run. So, to me, a lot of this stuff looks hella fugazi based on what I've seen on the first two games. I'm just not very impressed by them, do you know what I mean? I think the composition of their midfield looks a bit, they don't really have any pace out wide, you know. I don't understand Di Maria. How can Di Maria still be starting, you know, at the age of what? He's 34. I just think they need a bit more pace, man. And, you know, there's no way you can tell me that the only guy with pace is that Garnacho brother that plays at United. That's the only winger they've got with pace. They need, you know, they look hella stale, man. They just do. And it just looks like the tactics to me just looks like Messi and Inshallah. There's no, you know, there's no patterns of play. There's no link up. They don't seem to have, you know, when you've seen Brazil, you've seen Spain, even though Germany lost, when you watch some of those teams, the patterns are evident. You know, there's good rotations, there's good fluidity. Like, literally, no word of a lie, this just looks like give it to Messi and let's see what's going to happen, man. And I just think that's hella predictive considering how much, you know, Messi himself has slowed down, man. So I think, you know, they got the win today against Mexico. It was better, but based on what I've seen, you know, evidence of the first two games, man, unless I see significant improvement. I think the first team they come up against with PMP, they're going to get whacked out this competition.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, Mexico, to me as well, didn't really look like... I mean, they've not really kicked on from that kind of generation they have, where they were brought through the likes of Carlos Vera, the Dos Santos brothers. I'm trying to think of who else now. They had quite a few players. Still not kicked on. It's only really Lozano who looked like a threat for them. So you'd expect Argentina to be still quite confident going into it. Babs, what did you make of the initial lineup from Scaloni?
I thought it was pathetic. I think it was quite reminiscent of the England game, whereby you didn't have anybody that was going to get on the ball and help them in the first phase of play. And it was quite surprising that they actually went with the DM that they did, because in the first game, where they did have Paredes, even though they weren't exactly the best of teams, they were able to at least get the ball at the first phase. Whereas the guy they had in the middle today, I think it was Guido Rodriguez, he didn't seem at all any interest to actually drop in and help the phases of play. And what that ended up happening was you had Messi coming in even deeper than what he already was, trying to get stuff cracking. And then from there, you had no one for Lautaro Martinez to link up with. So I think that midfield composition was like a really, really big mess. And by the end of the game, really enough, the midfield looked a lot better than what it started with Palacios and Enzo Fernandez. You know, they had two midfielders there who were a lot more busy, a lot more able to get on the ball in all three phases of the game, and it allowed them to actually play a good and positive game. And I think one of the big things about that was you actually saw Messi being able to be in and around the penalty area, whereas in the first half, he was a lot more reserved, he was a lot more deeper, trying to get involved in the game. So I thought that was like a really big mistake. Not just that, but the right back, Montiel, guys, somebody needs to explain to me where the hell this guy came from. I don't think I've seen a worse performance from a right back in my life. I don't think he put in a single successful cross. He was trying to take on these men and he just like an absolute mess. It was very, very scary. And I don't know what's going on with Argentina, because they have absolutely nobody out wide in the attacking areas or even in the defensive areas. And normally when you actually brew a team that plays in a diamond, whether it be a 4-4-2 diamond or 4-4-2 box shape, you at least have two fullbacks they were able to actually offer you an outlet. And they didn't exactly have that. And I don't really know what they're going to do against a team like Poland, who are going to sit in more of a deep block and not allow them to actually get to those areas. So when they actually do get to the areas, what are those fullbacks actually going to deliver? So in my opinion, I thought the lineup was a bit of a mess. And I think it was quite prophetic from the manager as well. You know, I feel like he should show a bit more balls and just play Enzo Fernandez in the deepest role, as well as playing Ezequiel Palacios. I think those two offer Argentina a lot more in the midfield, both on and off the ball, and they offer a much-needed energy that they don't actually have currently. Paredes as well, even though I don't think he's the best of players, I still think he offers a lot more than Rodriguez. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a bit of a weird lineup. I'm not the biggest fan of Lautaro, so whenever he's up front, I'm not really expecting much. I think it was something like he achieved 3 out of 6 passes, pathetic. They didn't want to get involved in the play. And that's normally what somebody actually brutal with him with being able to do. You know, the Argentine Lacazette, as some would say. So it was a bit weird, you know, with the current lineup and just how like isolated those attackers looked and just how depleted the midfield looked. But I'm not surprised given what the manager seems to be like. And if he does continue to be like this in the knockout stages, they're going to go out in absolutely embarrassing fashion.
Yeah, it's mad. To be fair, admittedly, I'd never heard of Guido Rodriguez before today. I'd never heard of Gonzalo Montiel, the right back, before today. And it's weird because you've got not only one fourth on the bench. That's not me being biased, because he's expert. Like, he's quite decent in that tucked in right back position. He can at least carry the ball forward, and he's obviously done that well with Villarreal. That Molina, he's from what I've seen of him, quite good. Got a move to Atletico Madrid in the summer. Obviously not good enough to play. And like you said as well, it was very flat. There was nothing really from the fullbacks as well. It's like, if you've got a flat midfield, at least you can create some overloads out wide and still try and work it in the box. And they did it a couple of times, but not really much. Obviously Montiel, again, wasn't good. Marcos Acuna did a little bit, that little thickums, but he wasn't really consistent with it. So, yeah, going into half-time, it looked bleak. I didn't really remember any real chances created for Argentina, to be honest. Obviously, Mexico were just doing well just to get 2-3 people on Messi. pretty much at all times. Rodrigo de Paul as well was pretty sloppy from what I saw.
And my God, that brother stunk. And I'm a fan of him. He was nasty today. In fact, he was nasty first game as well. I don't know what's happened to him. He's just bang out of form. But I actually think he's a really good player. More time, I remember I watched him quite a lot when he was at Udinese. He was good. But this tournament so far, my goodness, he can't do anything right, man. He's just running about like a headless
chicken. It's like the same show, you know. On the big stage, this is where people tend to, you know, really attribute their opinions to a player. And these performances that he's putting out, he's not putting himself in the greatest of stead.
No, he's not. Especially as they're saying that Atletico are looking to move some players on. And these are players that are supposed to be of somewhat decent level of quality with decent transfer fees behind them. He hasn't exactly put himself in the best light. Like I've always liked him. I think he's quite a tenacious player. He's a goal threat. He's more deep lying and he gets on the ball a lot. And I thought maybe today, him in there with Acuna and and McAllister, I thought he'd be able to even try to get into the game and have a bit more of an influence. But watching him today, like the basics left him. The basics completely left him. I didn't understand what kind of performance I was watching from him. And I don't think a lot of people who would have watched that today would be feeling fairly positive about what this guy can offer Argentina and even any of his club teams at this point.
Obviously, moving on to the second half as well, Tops. What did you think that Argentina should have probably done at half-time just to try and get back into the game?
It's a difficult one because, to be honest with you, I didn't think the first half was great. You know, there wasn't many chances. When I think of this Argentina team, like Sheon said, a lot of it seems to be everything kind of through Messi and Inshallah, if they can get it sort of in that right side position towards Di Maria, then it kind of works. But when I watched them, I ain't going to lie to you and say that I've watched a lot of them in the last 36 games that they've gone unbeaten. I did watch like three of the final games in the Copa, which they won. I don't know. When I watch them, I get the feeling that they're just a chaotic side. I don't see a team who has a massive amount of control. And even though they've got players of real quality, you know, Di Maria, Martinez, Messi, Bentancur, all these different players, like, I just don't see a team that has the ability to exercise any level of control in a game at this stage.
I think they wish they had Bentancur.
You know, like, well, the thing is, though, is that like when I saw them against Saudi Arabia, I was baffled because Argentina are a team who I think are actually quite a physical team. They're very tenacious. Everybody's happy to go in for a challenge. Everybody's happy to go in for 50-50s. They got PMP'd. They got PMP'd by Saudi Arabia. And I was thinking today, coming against a team that they will know regularly and they will know how to perform against them, I did think it was very cowardly of the manager to pick the team that he did because he made 5 changes after, in my opinion, like the team that played against Saudi Arabia wasn't actually that bad. But to make the changes so drastically and players who I don't think had any real roles in the team, I don't think Montiel is better than Molina. No offence to McAllister, but I don't think he gets in over a Palacios or even over a Bentancur. And to be honest with you, based off what he's seen from...
Bro. Bentancur plays for Uruguay, bro.
Sorry. I'm thinking of
Palacios. Let's just pretend you said Enzo.
Come on, man. This ain't new Spurs order, bro. Come on. Share, bro.
Sorry. Yeah, so for him to start those... For him to change the team enough and not start the guys who we know actually are very good on the ball and are going to affect the game in the way that they can. I don't know. To me, it looked like a little bit cowardly from the manager. And I think he maybe was trying to protect himself because these kind of games as well, like if you make the wrong decisions, you make the wrong sort of movements in any point, all of a sudden you could be going home.
The thing is though, yeah, I feel like chaotic is the right word to describe them because let's have it right, yeah. The second half wasn't much better, bro. Messi's goal it's not like it came from a period of like heavy sustained pressure where their man were just pamming Mexico. Obviously, Mexico deferred and were just leaving two guys up top and they were just sitting back anyway. But it's not like it was wave after wave after wave of, you know, Argentina attack. It was just a moment of Messi brilliance that came out of nowhere, man. So, yeah, for me, they're going to have to just rise it properly, because I've seen Brazil, Spain, France have impressed me a lot more, you know, and these guys have, you know, they've got greater patterns to the way they attack. They've got a lot more pace. They've got much more ability to create separation. Like, listen, if they play France tomorrow, it's going to be a rerun of what happened in the 2018 World Cup. Mbappe and Dembele are going to pack them in, especially in transition, man. So, yeah, I can't see, even if you were to try and change personnel, which I think the manager can do, I don't see what's going to change that's going to make me think they're going to be a better team or going to be a big, big threat this tournament. Because based on the evidence I have, it's not just a personnel issue, it's a coaching issue. And I just don't think they have enough relative to, you know, the other competition, man. So I wouldn't even put them in like my top five favorites.
Damn, and was that even since before the tournament as well, or this is just as watching them has
it's me. Like I said, I can't pretend that I watched Argentina heavy. I even tweeted during the game, I said, how did Argentina beat Brazil in the Copa America last year? Because based on what I've looked like, they don't look like anywhere near as good as Brazil personally. So, you know, Brazil look much better balanced, generally better players in my opinion. They just look like, bro, they just look like Messi and a team of bums and thugs, man. I'm sorry, I have to be honest, bro. Like, unless you can tell me what their redeeming qualities are, you know, during that Copa America run, it doesn't look great to me at all, man, at all.
Yeah, I think it was literally just the foundation of what was, I guess, a solid defence at a time, and they just kind of lived off not really conceding goals and being able to rely on individuals to get them through. So obviously we saw Messi come out with a moment of greatness. Into the box, it didn't really even look on for him. It looked like there was loads of bodies in the way. He was gradually getting closed down by, again, two or three people, and he wrapped it in back of the net for what was probably going to be, or what could even be, his best World Cup moment. If Sean's prediction is to come true. Babs, how did you expect that to even happen? Or, like, it's considering how messy he was and how much he was getting criticised at halftime, albeit by English pundits for some of his body language, like, did you even see that coming, like, at all?
For me personally, no. I literally, like 10 minutes into the game, in my group chat, I was like, this just has a 0-0 written all over it. And like many games that have a 0-0 written all over it that involve Lionel Messi, he will pull out that moment of magic, and that's exactly what he did. But personally, I didn't really expect him to actually get that win.
No, me neither. Yeah, there was like a slight shift just before the goal. Like, Scaloni did make the change to bring on Enzo Fernandez, and it looked like there was just a little bit more incision to their play. There was just a couple of passes Enzo played to the right-hand side, and I was just like, oh, okay. Like, the ball was on the floor for how they were moving the ball through midfield at that point, and it was just, okay, this is someone who's being a bit braver, receiving the ball in better areas so Messi doesn't need to come as deep. So, yeah, positive substitution, but at the same time, it was still kind of a flash out of hand goal out of nowhere. Great goal.
He's a baller, by the way. I know the bar is in hell right now with Argentina, but I've watched him in the Champions League this season, Enzo Fernandez, and he's very, very impressive. I don't think he's going to be at Benfica very long. In fact, I'm sure he's the one that Benfica make next big bank off after, yeah, you know, the stuff with Nunes.
There's like a, I think it's like £120 million release for something crazy like that.
Is it? Yeah, yeah. He will, but he looks heavily impressive to me. Like, he, you know, when I see him, I see a lot of similar qualities I see in someone like a Bruno G, who I like heavily at Newcastle as well. You know, very tenacious, but very comfortable in all phases of the game. You know, just, you know, decent all-rounders. Sometimes these days we don't see like a lot of all-rounders anymore. I think that's why I like Bruno G heavily. We tend to see a lot of specialists. You know, you talk about the DM or, you know, a controller or, you know, someone who's more of a final third player. But what happened to guys, you know, just who were good all-round, man? So I like him. I like him a lot, man. And I think they'd be stupid not to start him in the next game against Poland as well. So, and Poland are a very physical team as well. So, yeah, they're going to need that, man.
Yeah. It was interesting because I think we spoke about on the main pod on Sunday about the fact that earlier Argentina teams, you know, there was a lot of emphasis on Messi having to come a lot deeper to get things cracking. And now they've actually finally got a couple of midfielders that can actually allow them to actually progress the ball in the first phase. And they're not even playing them, which is absolutely insane. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in their third game against Poland, because that would probably be the perfect game for them to actually test it out in terms of actually like seeing how that could be in knockout rounds. Because as far as I'm aware, in terms of the next game, I think if they come first in the group, which they would have to do if they beat Poland, they'd play the second in the group D. So if Australia somehow managed to beat Denmark, it would be them, but it would most likely be Denmark they don't play in against. And when you look at Denmark, they're a very well structured team. You know, they're not really like, they haven't really been amazing in the World Cup so far, but we've seen what they've done, you know, in the Nations League against teams like France. We've seen what they've done, you know, just in general over the last year, even at the Euros. So what they're going to have to do against them is going to be a lot more than what they've currently had to do in this group, because against Saudi Arabia and Mexico, they're not exactly the biggest of tests, you know, in terms of midfield battle or just how you are as a team structurally. So when you play against a team like Denmark, there's going to be a whole lot more asked upon you. And if I was to predict now, I wouldn't be surprised if they were to go out to Denmark. So in terms of like how the managers currently set the team. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that goes. But I think one thing as well I really want to see is just a lot more emphasis on the manager playing players that aren't so inclined to play to feet, similar to what Sean said earlier. So, you know, when they brought Alvarez on off the bench, he was someone that was happy to, you know, float across the front line, really push the defenders back and like make them actually have to make decisions. So just playing someone like that is going to be something so simple. But yeah, it's interesting because I don't know what the Argentina wing situation is like in terms of like who they've got available, but it really does beg the question to ask, like, what the hell was this coach thinking when he put together this team? Because as I said earlier, if you don't have any fullbacks that are going to offer you quality and width, you've at least got to have wingers. And when you're going to play against these top teams like a France or Brazil eventually, you're not going to be able to beat them in the field because they've got better midfielders than you, naturally speaking. I mean, if you're not able to beat them out wide, then what are you going to do? You can't rely on Messi magic. You know, we saw how that ended in the 4-2 against France at the last World Cup. So, yeah, it'll be interesting how they do. Personally, I think they're going to go crashing out eventually. And it's going to be a bit of a messy one, but no pun intended. But, yeah, we'll see, I guess. We'll see.
No, very well analysed, to be fair. Like, I agree with that. It's hard to see a kind of route for progression for that kind of team who you a lot of people kind of touted to be like strong favorites for it, obviously coming just off the back of Copa America and just using that as a baseline to be like, okay, yeah, they can compete for a World Cup, Messi's probable last World Cup. Now, as the game progressed against Mexico, they brought on a couple of defensive stars. Palacio came on, gave him more control. Julian Alvarez kind of looked like he had a decent cameo. But again, if you're looking to trouble bigger teams, I'm not sure how he'd do. Cuti Marrero came on, had a decent cameo, if I do say so myself, and saw out the clean sheet. And yeah, they got the win they needed. And they're going to need a win against Poland, like you say, to top the group. That will sum that up. Poland also played today. They had the tricky Saudi Arabians, who looked to just be a team which is just absolutely full of energy. Like, and I was listening to the pod, I can't remember what episode name it was, but Dan Cook's hosting, and there was a lot of criticism for Lewandowski. A lot of people on sections of the timeline calling him Lewand Disney. it's nasty. Yeah, a lot of people were kind of giving him the excuse of obviously playing in quite a poor team. And I'm looking at Poland, I was like, they've actually got quite a decent spine. So Chesney in goal, Kamil Glik in defence, that Krawiak's been a decent stalwart for them for a while. And Zielinski, who's been balling for the last at least 2 years.
I'm sure Sean was even unfamiliar with Bielik.
Yeah, Bielik. I was going
to mention that, but I couldn't remember how to say his name.
He's, I think he's still, is he still at Derby or is he at Charlton? I can't, no, he's at Derby, I think, isn't it? So,
yeah. I think he's on loan at the moment, but.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
But to be fair, he's a decent player, man. But to be fair, I thought Saudi Arabia were quite unlucky. They dominated that game heavily, in my opinion. They put Poland under heavy, heavy duress for a lot of periods in that game. I have to be honest and hold my hands up. Again, I don't know much about Saudi Arabia pre-tournament, but surprisingly, quite impressed by them, both in terms of energy levels. But technically, they actually look decent, you know. They move the ball around well. There's some decent combinations in and around in the final third. But ultimately, what's lacking, obviously, is a bit of quality in the final third. They managed to find it against Argentina in the first game, but they didn't have it today. I thought their penalty they got against Poland, to be fair, was quite lucky anyway. So I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought that was really soft. And then Chesney made two good saves anyway, essentially anyway, both the penalty. I thought the follow-up was a sick save, actually, because at first glance, it looked like the guy just ballooned it over. But you saw the hand he got to it. So that was a really, really good save, man. And ultimately, when you don't, you know, I think it is cliche. And, you know, when you have your periods on top in games, you need to capitalize. We saw what happened with Germany and Japan the other day when Germany had however many shots in that game. And, you know, they didn't take it. And I think Poland were ruthless, essentially. So, and you know, they had that more composure in the final third. Zielinski and Lewandowski, essentially, that's just the quality Saudi Arabia don't have. And that was the quality, that was the difference today.
Yeah, it's true. I think they created twice as many shots as Poland did. And it was just a case that they would get shots really close to their goal. These were like clear chances they would have. And they just kept on ballooning it over the bar. It was weird. I guess you're in a big World Cup in your kind of neighbor's back garden. It's understandable. You probably got a bit excited. And for whatever reason, they weren't able to finish their chances. So let's go to you. Obviously, I spoke on the criticism that I guess Lewandowski was having. Like, was you looking at him today and thinking, okay, you've got to rise it for your country today? I don't really want excuses. You're playing in a decent team against what? I know we've spoken about Saudi actually being a very good team, but still favourable opposition, in my opinion. But what did you think?
I mean, to be honest with you, I think it was just really important for him to break that duck. Obviously being such a high profile player during his time at Bayern Munich and now at Barcelona, this is someone that, you know, they as a country have looked to, and they knew that really, you know, with his age, his number of World Cups he's been to, that time was kind of running out, and especially with him missing that penalty against Mexico in what would have been a really, really important sort of win. It was really time for him to kind of step it up. And to be honest with you, I still think there's questions. I wasn't particularly impressed with him today. I thought that he did some good bits, and obviously he was involved in the he provided the assist for the first and scored the second. But I don't know. I still feel that, like, maybe the way that they're playing, or maybe if he's in his own head, he just doesn't seem to be the same sort of player. Like, lots of different things. When I watch him, I look like some of the basics that he was doing. Some of his link up with Milik, some of it was just a bit odd. And then even when he was in moments where he should have made a difference, obviously the goal, he made a difference. The assist, he made a difference. But I still kind of feel like I almost feel like sometimes when he's playing for Poland, he's trying too hard. And obviously there's lots of players that, you know, the players that he used to playing with are of real sort of quality. But when I watch him at Poland, I'm just like surprised that he's playing the way he is. And I feel like now this next game against Argentina, which is huge, that he really has to try and make it extremely difficult for them in order to try and get any sort of points from this game. It's weird as well, because being a captain, you sometimes think you've got to take on a bit more of this responsibility yourself. But I just feel like today was probably one of the first times I've seen him do that for his country on the big stage. Yeah,
that's fair enough. I think, you're right. Some of his bits of application in some phases were a little bit sloppy. But there were times as well, I felt like, obviously, when Saudi Arabia put Poland under pressure, he was quite a good pressure valve for them and managed to resist pressure a few times to get his team forward, because He seems to operate a bit deeper than Milik or Piątek, and kind of just plays that more of a 10 role for them, which might be another reason why he doesn't get as many goals as you probably see on the biggest stage. But I thought he was decisive today. And yeah, fair play to him. Got the goal right at the end. His celebration was one of just absolute relief in the end. He just ended up collapsing to the floor. I think he was in tears as well. So yeah, at least fair play. He's got his first World Cup goal. That's a big, big monkey off his back, and maybe he'll stop getting called Lewin Disney on the TL. Or maybe he will. Who knows? Another game today as well, Tunisia versus Australia. Tunisia representing African teams were tilted to... After their first game, we joined 0-0. They were tried to do quite well in their remaining games. I think they were probably favoured to beat Australia today, but they lost by a goal to nil. Yeah, pretty great game. Australia rising it for their country. And yeah, fair play to them. They've done their country proud. Final other game today, though, and we've got to get onto it. We'll see France versus Denmark, which was supposed to be quite a tasty tie. Like, Denmark had quite a few tussles with them in the Nations League, and albeit it was at a time where France were probably experimenting with three at the back builds and certain centre backs, and yeah, just trying to incorporate more attackers into their team, like Benzema coming back into the fold. Denmark ended up beating them twice, and yeah, it looked like a good game again. Babs, what were you thinking about this tie going into it?
Well, what can I say, man? You know, normally when we look at a France side, you see a lot of quality, but you know, sometimes these players don't tend to show up. Not just that, but you know, there is that thing of the reigning World Cup champions do tend to go out in the group stages. But you know, what can I say? You know, a certain young man, the second highest scorer in French World Cup history, 7 World Cup goals in 9 games, 2 game winners in this tournament, the young Kylian Mbappe. When you've got that kind of player there, that kind of talent there, an absolute game breaker, I expect nothing but a team to at least have a chance to get the win. You know, I think it was quite characterised by, even in the first half, whereby Griezmann played a testing ball in behind, and Mbappe's made a curling run, and he's literally forced Christensen to actually foul him, you know, in the end there. And when you've got a player like that, you know, who's actually just an amazing outlet, a good 1v1 threat, is able to finish, is able to create. He's just the only way to describe it is a game breaker. You know, I think German Dan described it as well as anybody. The guy is absolutely devastating. And when you've got a player like that, you know, carrying a French nation, you know, who would have thought, you know, a young guy, you know, under 23 player carrying a nation on his back like this, you know, when you got that kind of player there, exactly, again, anything's possible. And not just that, but even Griezmann, I know there's been a lot of distractors about him playing for the French national team, but I don't think there's been any player, you know, who's performed as well as he has, you know, consistently throughout international tournaments. You know, Euro 2016, you know, that was his show. You know, he was the guy who was really carrying the French national team, and he's carried it on all the way through now. So I think one thing that I can say of the French team that worries me is the fullback situation. So looking at Theo Hernandez, as good as he's going forward, you can definitely get at him defensively. You know, Lundstrom, the young Eintracht Frankfurt winger, you know, I know he's been setting the world alight in the Bundesliga. I know, Sean, I know you probably want to talk about him. I know you're
a baller.
He gave him a bit of a headache, you know, at times 1v1, and then you have Koundé on the other side, who he had an amazing pass into Griezmann for the second goal, but even still, he's not exactly a natural fullback. So those kind of positions there, they're definitely able to be gotten at there, but they just got so much quality all over the field that they're just able to put a team to the sword.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah. I just want to wind it back a little bit, because I don't think many people actually expected France to start quite this well. Obviously, there was quite a lot of disruption going in to the World Cup with just how they were even going to set up. And then they had all of these injuries just suddenly happen. And I felt like they've just kind of gone back to a lot of their basic principles in which they won the last World Cup with, especially in terms of the shape. Sean, how would you kind of just see how they like set up?
No, I agree with you. I was thinking because, you know, I'd seen before a lot of France experimenting. I'm not a fan of Deschamps. He had been doing a lot of free-at-the-back experimentations. But I think I agree with you in terms of I think he's just gone very simplistic. And I think this is a wider interesting point. You know, a lot of managers tend not to have, you know, international football, you don't have a lot of time with the players in it. So I think you just got to try and find the most coherent setup that's going to get the best out of the group you have at your disposal. I mean, if you think we finished the Prem season, and we just went, there was no friendlies. It just went straight into like the World Cup. So I just think, I think he's simplified it as much as possible. Mbappe and Dembele are the main danger men. They use Giroud as the foil. Griezmann can play from him. It's not very complex from a tactical standpoint, but you have the quality in it to win games. And, you know, France, from what I saw, especially today, they're not a team that like to press high either. They kind of invite you onto like a mid block and they try to create spaces where they can create transitions for Mbappe and Dembele. And even if they can't create the transitions for them, when they do have, you know, periods of dominance in the game, you know, those two can isolate you 1v1 and just finish you. Dembele was really doing some shimmy shimmy, jinky majinky in the first half, man. So
I just think he was so good in that first half.
He was giving them hell, man. So I am fair play to them. I have to give them credit because I hadn't really placed any expectation on France, to be honest. And the talk is that apparently they're a more serene camp without Benzema there. That's what I read. Obviously, I don't know how true that is, man. But you know, sometimes with the French, how they can self-implode. You know, sometimes they tend to do well one international tournament, then the next international tournament, they're all beefing each other. But they look pretty serene at the moment, you know. And this is quite a well-balanced lineup. So yeah, man. You know, I think overall they're doing okay, man. So I think it will be interesting to see. You know, obviously they're the first team through now, so how they have to adapt when they play better teams in the knockout stages. Does Deschamps go maybe a bit more negative? Because to be fair, I'm quite surprised he's essentially just playing four attackers, you know. But I also have to give credit to Rabiot. I'm not a big fan of him generally, but I actually think he's been quite decent in the first two games as well, man. I actually think credit where it's due. Tchouaméni, brother, that brother's brazy, man. He's cold. Can't say anything else about him. I'm obviously, you know me, CEO of the Saliba Propaganda fan club. You know, I'm kind of hoping certain man, you know, make a couple errors. So I'm ready to just load up on the propaganda. But, you know, they're holding it down. They're holding it down so far, man. So, and I think today it was a good win because I think Denmark are a decent team, personally. I think we all saw them in the Euros. I think they've got some tricky players, you know, Damsgaard, Eriksen, Lindstrom, some decent technicians as well. I think probably they need a striker, man. You know, they just don't look potent without. If they had a good striker, or maybe we just need some more immigration in Denmark. You know, there's a lack of PMP there, so they need some more immigrants in their team, man. It's looking a bit paceless up there. But no, generally, I think they're all right, man. And I think they'll beat who's the last game? I think they'll beat Australia in the last game and they'll go through Denmark because I think they're a decent team. I think they'll go through to the knockout stage.
It's a must win as well, really.
Because they've
obviously got the win. They drew their first game. They lost and they drew their first game, didn't they? So
yeah.
Very important for them to try and get a result out of that Australia game. And Australia will be looking as much as they can to stop them from winning, really. I was really, really impressed with the French today. I just think, like, from a squad perspective, I just think they're so stacked with quality. You know, right from the centre backs to the attacking players, to even some of the players they have that they can mix and throw into the midfield. Like, I just don't understand how you can have a dual threat with Dembele and Mbappe, players who have the ability to hurt you going in behind, but have the quality, the technical ability to come inside, take players on one-on-one, drag players away. I thought Griezmann today was excellent. Like, I think today his work off the ball was absolutely fantastic. He must have recovered the ball 5, 10, 15 times today. And obviously the assist for Mbappe for the second goal was like, was really, really good. I even like the fact that they have him in there and he has a free-ish role and you have, like, you know, your box to box, and you have your DM or your six in Tchouaméni, who I honestly think is brilliant. I think he's such an elite ball winner, and he gives them such an easy foundation to kind of build from. He puts himself about, he gets around the pitch. And like Sheldon said, I think Rabiot's done okay this tournament. Like a lot of people, I think, give him a bit of grief. Maybe they want a bit more from a player in that role, maybe with his ability. But I actually think he's done exactly what they've needed, you know, giving those four attacking players the foundation or the start point to be able to build. I was really, really impressed with Griezmann today. I think quietly he's been one of the players of the tournament so far. I know we're only in the second game for the group stages, but I just think he's gone about his business kind of quietly, but kind of effectively as well in that French team. Obviously, Mbappe will take the plaudits, you know, the two match winners, really quite an imperious sort of... when I watched Mbappe, I'm just baffled how a guy this young is this athletic, making guys look so silly. His ability to get in behind, his ability to link up, his ability to just want the ball all the time and cause a problem every time he attacks. Like, and to be that young and to be doing it and basically carrying a country on your back is just, yeah.
Yeah, he's World Cup over Messi's then, yeah?
I mean, 100%, he's more likely to win. France are more likely to win than Argentina. I don't think France will win, but, you know, if you were a better man, you'd 100% say they're more likely to win than Messi. Put it to tomorrow, if France meet Argentina, who's your money on? It's easy money for me, man. So, yeah, man. I think, you know, from a legacy standpoint, what Mbappe is doing at the moment, I know Babs will want to chime in. He's got 7 goals in 9 World Cup games. Mm-hmm. I think I saw someone post he's already got over 220 career goals, you know, club goals at the age of 23. He's clutch, you know, he's already bagged in 1 World Cup final, 4 times top goal scorer in France, bare Champions League goals. I know, yeah. I've even got it here. 40.
It's crazy as well. Like, I think he's even got like 30 or 31 goals for France as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
not even that far behind Giroud, who's about to take Henri's record, you know?
That's the thing. As much as that's paining me that Giroud's going to take Henri's record, it ain't going to last long. So by probably, what, in a year or so's time, Mbappe will have gone past that record anyway. So, yeah, it's a minor, man. So, yeah, you can't say anything. He's fantastic, bro. Honestly, he's fantastic. So, you know, I don't think they will win it. But if they do, 2 World Cups by the age of 23, brother. Speak nicely on his name, innit?
Yeah, legacy.
100%.
And even before I go on to it, I think one of the interesting things I found with this French team, similar, so going off what Top said, is the use of Griezmann. So he's actually kind of been like a third centre mid in a way, in that free roam role. So he's actually helped the midfield a bit, you know, in terms of like actually getting involved in like the duels, winning tackles. And I think just because of the way naturally he's always been, you know, he's always had an engine on him. So he's not exactly going to struggle to get up and down the field. And I feel like that allows Mbappe and Dembele to be a bit more lazy, as you'd expect from them. I don't know if he's going to be effective long-term, you know, as a long-term solution, because I do think a top side like a Brazil, who have both the quality on the ball, but also the tenacity off the ball to still actually bully you as well. I'm not sure if that's going to work against a team like that. But for the now, it is actually doing quite a good job, you know, just in terms of like disrupting opposition teams. And yeah, going back onto Mbappe, yeah, like Sean said, you know, the legacy he's putting up for himself is absolutely ridiculous. 7 World Cup goals. You know, you look at the top goal scorer in a Miroslav Klose with 16. Just how close could he be to him, you know, by the end of the World Cup? And just what would that say for his actual footballing legacy? You know, you can imagine that if he does win a second World Cup for France, who can you put above him when it comes to all-time French players? Like, really and truly, who can you put above him? Like, I don't know, what do you guys think about what this could actually mean for his legacy? Because I know a lot of people have been mentioning, you know, the likes of Messi and Ronaldo and in some aspects Neymar, but what would winning a World Cup do for Mbappe's legacy in you guys' opinions?
Winning 2 World Cups, you really have to put him at the top table. I mean, even... like, obviously, a lot of people say that, like, he's just hiding away in Ligue 1, but you've just seen how clutch he is, even in Champions League games for PSG as well at times. But yeah, winning the World Cup and being that main cog in as to why your country have won it potentially twice. Yeah, he's at the top table, man.
Agreed, man. Agreed. I think that's like the point you made about him. You know, you can be in a World Cup squad and win two and not really even be involved, but the fact that he's at this age and he's of such importance to the French team and even his club team, like at this age, to be carrying the team and to be performing at this high level, match winners, assists, causing problems for teams, literally dragging the team through to wins, like that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the start of a player who really is kind of creating his own history, really. And to be honest, he's got to be in the question of, like, you know, greatest ever French players if he's able to win a second World Cup for them. He absolutely has to be. I know.
Or maybe even top 10 players of all time.
You know, Henri's and the Zizou's and the Platini's, but like, he has to be involved in these top table talks about the greatest ever for France, because at this point, he's pulling them on his back, literally putting them on his back and dragging them through these games.
Yeah, 100%, man. It's hard to argue against that. And I always hate when people, you know, will use the Premier League argument as if, you know, people won't rate him until he scores against Southampton, you know, on a wet, windy away night. But I feel like, you know, even if you want to disregard, like, you know, the titles he's won at PSG, what age was he when he won the title with Monaco? He was like 17, 18, right? And he was mashing work in every knockout round of that Champions League. Because I remember he scored, if you remember that season where Monaco were in the Champions League, they played City, he scored home and away. He played Dortmund.
Yep.
Did he score home and away? Played Juve in the semi-finals, they went out, but I'm pretty sure he scored against Juve as well. So, you know, this is a guy who, as a teenager, is getting through, is doing a madness, bro. He won the World Cup by the age of 19. You have to put major, major respect on this guy's name. Everything you want to do, he's delivering, you know. The only thing, obviously, if he does do another World Cup, that won't be on his CV, will be a Champions League, but you wouldn't put him past, you know, winning one Champions League in his, you know, in his career, would you? So I'd expect him to do that at some stage, man. So, yeah, I think if he was to do it, you know, you'd then start to have some serious conversations around, you know, where his standing is, definitely.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, you're going to look back on his career and you're going to see Messi and Ronaldo look to enter in like the severe twilight areas of their careers now. But yeah, I think football is in very good hands in Kylian Mbappe.
Quick question. Do you think, I don't know, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Do you think that it could come back to bite France if they're relying on him too heavily?
Do you know what? How much do they ever rely on him, really, though? I mean, they do heavily rely on him, but I think they've got a very good structure in that team now. Now they've kind of refound it from, I guess, the old World Cup, especially with Griezmann. The midfielder, Ousmane Dembele coming back as well. It's really going to help them going forward. So, I don't know. Yeah. I think they've got enough in their team to...
It's a funny one. I don't know. I looked at them today. I thought Giroud was poor. He come off. They brought Thuram in. And then they took off Dembele and they brought in Koeman. And then after that, I don't want to say like they became toothless. Like Denmark got a bit more back into the game. And yeah, they had a couple chances like on the break. But then I kind of felt that like any sort of attacking threat after those two goals, it kind of diminished. And I didn't really see that they were doing too much. They had a couple chances, but I don't know. I just don't want them to get to a situation whereby, because obviously Benzema's not there, Giroud isn't, like, obviously he is prolific for France, but like obviously he's not massively liked because he can't perform even in games like today. But I just don't want him to get to a point whereby they're looking at Kylian to literally take him out of a hole when they need to get out of them. And just that little period when, you know, Dembele and Giroud come off, I looked in and I was like, I don't know, they don't look great at this point. But I don't know, maybe that was just a small portion of the game, to be honest.
To be fair, they have lost when you consider the guys that were already injured and missing the World Cup for France. They have, you know, they've still got decent depth, but I hear what Tops is saying, because when I look at the midfield, I'm like, it's solid, but it's unspectacular. You know, there's, you know, when you think about France, there's always a midfielder with a bit of, you know, jinky majinky, bro. There's not much flair in that midfield without Pogba. You know, there's my boy, what's his name, at Lorient, that Enzo Lefebvre, but obviously it's probably too soon for him. But obviously, and Nkunku got injured. So when you look, you know, I think obviously Koeman's a decent replacement for like Dembele or Mbappe. But, you know, it's Marcus Thuram and Kolo Muani from Frankfurt. There's not actually that much, you know, in the attack. So that you know, that probably might be something for them to slightly be worried about. So, yeah, keeping Mbappe and Dembele fit. If they keep those two fit, and they have Koeman in reserve for the bulk of the tournament, then I can definitely see them going far, because defence is still relatively solid. You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, Varane and Upamecano started today. They were relatively solid most of the game. You've got Konate and Saliba in reserve. Koundé, they didn't take, you know, that talent from Leon Marlo Gusto, who I think is really, really talented as well. So France are quite stocked, man, especially defensively and you know, some decent options in midfield. But yeah, they're obviously reliant on Mbappe and Dembele to carry them over the line. I think that those are the main threats from France. So if they can keep them fit and healthy for the majority of the tournament, then they have as good a chance as any.
So I have a question, Sean. I know you said you don't expect them to win the tournament. So what can they do to convince you to really put you, you know, as that kind of team? And what team do you have in mind that you think is going to actually be the team to stop them, either on their side of the tournament tree or on the other side?
So I think Brazil are still my favourites. They were my favourites from the start, and I probably haven't seen anything to change. You know, when we talk about stacked attacks, you know, we were talking about when you look at what Brazil literally changed five attackers the other night, and you saw the five they brought on, and I said, yeah, this is a joke. Like, generally, their front four they started with was Richarlison, Neymar in behind, Rafinha left, Vinicius right. Then they had what? They brought on Martinelli, they brought on Rodrigo, they brought on Jesus, they brought on Anthony. And I was like, yeah, that's levels. From time when you can leave Bruno G, who in my opinion is top five centre mids in the Prem, as an unused sub on the bench, crazy. So for me, yeah, that would be my favourites. What would make me think France have a better chance? I want to see them when they play a team at similar level, personally. So that would probably be, you know, what would sway my opinion. You know, if they had a, you know, a Pogba fit in firing, I'd probably bank on them a bit more as well. So yeah, like I said, Rabiot and Tchouaméni is solid, but probably a bit unspectacular in my opinion. So but you know, if I was to look at it from the other side, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, solid and unspectacular can be enough to win. You know, it doesn't need to be the most flary, because Paquetá and Casemiro, Is it that much better than that partnership? Some would argue maybe not. So I think, you know, yeah, probably to convince me, I just need to see more. Based on what I've seen in terms of talent, structure, overall play, like that Brazil-Serbia game, it was just all Brazil. You know, I think there was no doubt in my mind in that game that Brazil were going to win. That goal was always coming, you know, and the moment that game was broken open, it was game done for me. So yeah, I still have them as my strong favorites. I am intrigued slightly by Spain, just because I think, and I was impressed actually, I think, because, you know, a lot of people wrote Spain off at the Euros, but I thought Spain were very good at the Euros, to be fair.
Agreed.
I thought Spain were very, very good at the Euros. And, you know, in my mind, they still have the, you know, they have Pedri, who in my mind is the best young midfielder in world football, who's a joke. So, and their midfield is very, very balanced. They control games well. They create a lot of chances. Obviously, they probably have the weakest attack, in my opinion, compared to, you know, relative to all the other favourites. So that's probably where it falls down a bit more, in my opinion. But, and yeah, when I'm seeing people like Aspi start at fullback for Spain, I'm like, bro.
Aspi right back, Rodri centre back.
Yeah. So, you know, And Eric Garcia is the exact definition of white privilege, man, because I don't know what that guy's doing to get to that point where he is, man. You know, he's highly, highly favoured. But yeah, so I think Spain, midfield-wise, they're always strong, man. But I'm a bit concerned about them defensively and offensively. So that's why I wouldn't plump on them as favourites. But you don't know. You don't know. I think it would be wrong to rule out Spain, man. But yeah, so Brazil for me, I think if Germany had a proper striker, I would put them up there as well. But because they created more than enough chances to beat Japan the other night. And is that Germany? Is it Germany Spain tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, that one. I think, you know, to your answer, Babs, we'll get some more answers tomorrow.
Look forward to that. But, you know, I actually do agree with you in terms of the favourites, in terms of Brazil. I feel like a lot's made up about them in the attacking sense. But when you look at them defensively, you know, in the last, 70? So I was looking at him. So Tite, he's managed 77 games for Brazil since 2016, right? They've conceded 27 goals. And he's kept 53 clean sheets within those games. So, yeah, they are an amazing attacking team, but it's also a team with formidable defensive foundations in the likes of Marquinhos and Thiago Silva, with Alisson in behind that. Like, you've got three of the best, you know, players there in their respective positions. And then you go ahead of them, you've got arguably the best DM in the world in Casemiro. So, when you think about that, yeah, their attack is amazing. You know, yeah, they've got these amazing Mavericks that are able to unlock any defense that possible. But you've also, I guess, got to look at them defensively, the fact that they've not really conceded many goals. They don't really concede many chances. And it will take quite the miracle to actually both outscore them and actually get goals past them. So I do agree with you there. It will be hard to look past them. But I think that could actually be an amazing game to see for the neutral anyway, you know, in terms of a World Cup final. But coming back to France, you know, a strong 2-1 win. I thought another interesting part with that game was the use of the two centre backs. I know a lot has been made about Upamecano by a lot of people. You know, a lot of people don't seem to rate him, but personally, I'm not gonna lie, I've always been a fan. I would have had a bit of a soft spot for him just because of like his actual on the ball ability. Like, you just can't look past what he actually offers. You know, in a team who are actually devoid of having like a midfield maverick, so he's actually able to bypass the midfield and put in a ball, you know, to the likes of Mbappe or Dembele and just get things cracking from the back. I think he's had a strong World Cup cameo so far. You know, he's strong in his duels, you know, he wins his tackles and you can trust him on the ball. So I feel like even still when you look at him, he's only 24. So it'll be interesting to see how he does long term, because I am a bit of a fan of him and I do think he's put a good account for himself during this World Cup.
France are stacked at centre back, man. They're absolutely stacked at centre back. Like, you could mix and match with any of those four options and you'll be calm. Obviously, Koundé himself is naturally a centre back, but obviously they're paying him at right back. So and to Babs's point, I think that's important because you know, I think one thing I've noticed in this World Cup so far is that I think a lot of the teams are really well set up tactically. You know, they don't give a lot away, especially in the central zones as well. So I think good build up is key. And especially, like, you know, if you know, this is one of the issues I had with England the other night, because Bellingham and Rice weren't giving it as well. I think it's key to be able to have good build up pillars from all angles. And it's probably one thing I've learned from, you know, me as an Arsenal fan under Arteta, where he focuses heavily on that. You know, every facet of our back five, you know, from our goalkeeper, who's really good at distribution, Zinchenko, both Gabriel and Saliba, and Ben White, who tucks in. So I just think, especially when teams are trying to block off central zones as well, having people who can carry into different zones, who can distribute from different angles, can, you know, it just gives you another bow to your, yeah, you know, another string to your bow, man. So I think it is important going forward. If, you know, France have guys like Upamecano who can give them that as well, if you know, the centre mid, you aren't giving that as well, man. So it's probably, yeah, an interesting facet to watch, man. But yeah, I would have France in the top, maybe top, yeah, you know what, maybe France top three favorites, definitely, man. I think top three. I don't think that's unfair.
Cool. And the other two are what? Brazil and
I don't know now. So for me, I might go, yeah, I'm not sure. I might have to come back on that one. Because I like Portugal squad, but I think CR Kelly is a hindrance and also their coach is a bum. So those two things I think will work against them. I feel like someone like Portugal have got huge bust potential and I wasn't really impressed with them against Ghana the other night, if I'm to be totally honest. So I'm not going to put them there, even though I like their squad. Spain, I like the way they play and I think Luis Enrique is a good coach. But, you know, I think there are areas where they're very strong, i.e. midfield, but there are areas where there's a lot of question marks as well, you know, particularly at fullbacks for me and, you know, lack of a proper shooter. You know, the fact that Asensio was doing false nine and Morata was sitting on the bench the other night, you know, that doesn't speak volumes to him. I would put Germany up there if they had a striker. But they've got a lack of a consistent shooter themselves as well. So
I'd question Germany defensively, you know, Sean.
Facts.
Yeah.
Agreed, man. Agreed. That's not a bit gay.
I just felt that like those chances that they gave up to Japan, it was too easy. Like and the thing about big teams, I think is so important is that when you're playing these games, you need to be able to first of all put your chances away. But secondly, when you are asked to defend, you need to defend.
No, it's true. And it's true.
I'm very surprised at the ability in which they were able to get those chances in against Germany the other night. And
did Germany not have a good right back? What's going on there, man? Why are you playing Sula out there, bro? That guy cannot run. Like he cannot run, back,
man. I don't know why
it's crazy. It's crazy because you look at Hansi Flick on what he's done in terms of bringing them young players, you know, guys that starred in that Euro German team. You know, one of the biggest stars in that team was Ridley Baku at right back. And you think that he'd bring... I have no idea.
He was decent.
He's still at Wolfsburg. And I'd assume that naturally as a option there, what you could offer them going forward would be a lot better than what you'll get from a Sule. And I'm not sure if he's having a good season or a bad season at Wolfsburg. I'm not going to pretend like I've watched him, but from what I've seen of him anyway, I would assume that he's going to be, obviously, it's going to be a lot better having a natural right back there. The other thing that worries me with them is the centre-backs. So Rudiger has been quality, but you look at his partner in Schlotterbeck and God!
That brother makes
me sick. You know when we talk about stinkers...
Yeah.
You know, we talk about things like sometimes we kind of like overreact about a player and how bad they've played, but you look at Schlotterbeck, absolute mess, terrible footwork, completely lacking any sort of positional awareness. He didn't want to get involved in his duels 1v1, and that's just the basics of what you expect from a centre back. And that's going to cost them really big, you know, in terms of defence. And even looking at midfield, right? I love Gundogan, I love Kimmich, but I think one thing they lack in that midfield is someone that's actually able to like track off the ball runners. You know, Kimmich and Gundogan, they're decent defensively. Kimmich is good in his duels. You know, he'll intercept the ball, but I just feel like they lack something though in terms of actual guys roaming in behind them. Because as you can imagine, if a Griezmann to like pick up the pockets that he does, you know, that he has done, you know, so far in the group against them, Denmark and Australia, if he does it against those two. You need someone to track him, and I'm not sure that Germany have that kind of position. You know, you look at Gavi, you know, for Spain, that's another player that likes to actually, you know, roam around, and I'm not sure he's going to do that for them tomorrow. So it'll be interesting to see how their midfield does.
I think that's a really good point, you know. I was looking at their squad, and you're absolutely right. Like, they're probably the most defensive-minded player in that midfield is probably Kimmich.
Yeah.
He's got a lot good at tracking
running. Yeah. Goretzka, but I guess he's more box to box. I think, yeah, probably what I would do if I was Germany. Obviously, I know Kimmich is top and better in midfield, but he has played at right back. He's comfy at right back, and he's probably a good option at passing from right back as well. You know, build up. I'd consider doing him there, and then Goretzka and maybe Gundogan in midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Musiala just ahead, baller, big baller, and then. Is obviously, I know they said Sané had an injury in training, in it, that's why he didn't play the other game. But yeah, if he was fit, I'd have him and Gnabry, and then boy, brother, anyone but that Havertz guy up top, man.
Anybody but that guy, man.
He's
some of the quotes, the guy that come out this week. I don't know, man.
Yeah, they need sign, bro. Even if it's that young youth, Mukoko or Adeyemi, but just give me sign, bro, because. He ain't doing nish. He's doing nish, bruv. And he's had so many chances, bruv. It's enough now, man. It's enough. Give someone else
a go.
So many
chances. Like, come on.
Give somebody else a go, man. It's enough, bro. So yeah. Pass on the baton, man. So yeah. Do you know what? After all of that said, yeah. I was saying I don't put France up there. I put France second favourites now. Bro. yeah. But hey, Brazil number.
It's one of the ones where, like, you know when you start to actually like put it together, you think
I'm just like, okay, France are better than a lot of these men, bro.
Yeah, they are better than a lot of these men. It'll be definitely interesting to see how they do. And You know, I don't know about you guys, but I've actually been enjoying this World Cup so far. So
it's been good, man. I actually think it's been good. I think, you know, there's been a lot of teams that people didn't obviously think much of, but there's been a lot of shocks, which have been good. You know, you've seen mm-hmm. Iran, you've mm-hmm. seen Saudi Arabia. I like Japan, by the way. I do. Yeah, I like Japan a lot. I actually think they're a decent team, you know, very underrated, very, very technical, bro. You know, if they had a bit more PMP, they'd cause teams hella damage, because they know how to, they're the sort of team, yeah, that you can put under pressure, but they know how to play through you, bro. Yep. You know, there's a couple of times Germany were trying to press up high, and I was like, yeah, Japan will put in quick 1-2 moves. And I was like, they're out. And the longer that game went on, you could see that thing from Japan coming. You could literally see it coming, boy. So, yeah, and they've got decent players, Japan. They just do. They really do. So, yeah, I hope. Actually, it would be mad if one of Germany or Spain don't get out and Japan do.
You know, personally, mate, I wouldn't be surprised, because if Spain go and beat Germany,
and but Germany Japan are out, isn't it?
Costa Rica, they are out. Japan,
they're out. Yeah, they should pack them, man. If they should be able to pack Costa Rica tomorrow. So,
yeah. No, I expect Japan to pack Costa Rica. So, yeah, I think it comes down to the fact that, yeah, boy, if Spain beat Germany, that's it, boy. Germany out.
It's scary, man.
Sunday night, they could be packing their bags, heading back to Munich, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even when you talk about another underdog, you look at even like an Ecuador. You know, they've been quite impressive. I was really impressed with them against
Holland. Nasty
dog.
Yeah, they look nasty, man. They look nasty.
I don't understand half of what Van Gaal's doing with that team, man. It just looks bare. It just looks bare uncoordinated, man. It's not nice to watch. And Ecuador, bruv, their man have got a hella PMP, bro. And I remember the first game here against Saudi Arabia. People were like, how can these men run like that? I was like, you might forget Ecuador's in the mountains, boy. These men are used to high altitude, bro. Them guys do not stop running all game.
Yesterday when I was watching that game, I was just like, there are lots of names that are kind of household names, but when you actually deep them, just flattering to deceive,
some of them are not that good, man. Some of them are not that
Frankie
good.
Frankie Young, boy,
like, you know, they're still starting like Daily Blin and Bergwijn. It's just like, I don't know, man. I'm not impressed by like Coop Miners, I'm not moved by like Klassen. Like, I don't know, they just don't look like a team that, with the kind of like, well, the history behind Dutch football and, like, you know, them being all technical players and the players that they have kind of developed in the last few years, I just was so disappointed by them yesterday. I just thought, like, the game, even though it was a draw in the end, Ecuador deserved way more from that game, man. Yeah. And you're right, Sharon, they properly PMP'd them yesterday. Properly.
Yeah. And it's funny, yeah, because I know a lot of people have spoken about Moises Caicedo, you know, he's been really big at Brighton, but that other midfielder they have, I think Yegson Mendes, he's really impressed me. He's really, really impressed me with the way he's actually like got on the ball and tried to dictate play. Even the Qatar game, I missed the second half, so I watched a couple of the highlights, and he was that guy that seemed to be, you know, getting on the ball and like actually like making a real impotence on the way they wanted to play. So they've got quite a few players, and you know, Ener Valencia is looking like he's gonna potentially get the World Cup goal on the ball.
He's scoring more goals than some of these other men.
You got to remember as well, Ecuador were the ones who stopped Chile and Colombia from qualifying as well for this man. So yeah, I don't. People shouldn't sleep on them, man. You know, so I think they're the sort of team. Yeah, if you're gonna beat them, they will make you work for it, bruv. You have to get in the slums with them and proper slog it out to beat Ecuador, man. Agreed. So because I've even seen sometimes, you know, some of the qualifying games they give Brazil and Argentina hell. So yeah, man.
And in knockout football, one thing you're not going to want to do is go to extra time, man.
Yeah.
It seems like that they're going to run for that 180 for all those minutes. So good luck to whoever has to play them, because I'm not going to be surprised if they do get into the next round of the World Cup qualifiers, World Cup knockout stages. Sorry.
Just working out. So with I see Ecuador being in Group A. Do they play Group B for the knockout? Yeah. That's how it works. So they play. If that's true, they play whoever's in England's group. So if England finish first, and like, I expect Netherlands to beat Qatar, even if they're cheeks. So Ecuador likely to finish second. We'd probably get, well, I'd say England will probably get Ecuador in the next round. And
that would be hard. Be,
won't be easy. That wouldn't be an easy game.
It won't be easy.
I'm telling you,
boy. Nah, it could get very sticky, boy, because looking at the way the PMP of USA caused England hella problems yesterday, boy.
Oh, man. I had a little bit of South America.
Because what you need to bear in mind, yeah, England, based on what we've seen, England are not a team that can control games well at all, you know. So England bank on outworking a lot of teams as well, and the fact of the matter is what you saw last night is that USA could keep up, you know, easily with England as well. So, you know, England are going to need to learn how to control games. Well, I mean, obviously I don't expect it to happen, you know, with waistcoat and stuff, but yeah, man. So I'm Ecuador, if England get them, that would be a very, very tough game. Very, very tough game.
Yeah, I would have been surprised to see a lot.
Is that guy played for Ecuador? The one that is he plays for Brighton? Is it Estepina?
Yeah, the left back. That centre back, Hincapié, he looks good, man. I like him as well, man. Now, do you know what? Ecuador won't be an easy game, boy. I think, and that's the sort of game, I could easily see that game going to extra time. Easily see that game going to extra time. England will struggle to beat them, 100%.
And they play three at the back as well.
Yeah, it would be tough, man. That would be tough. Yeah, good luck.
Damn thing. Well, I guess I will round up tonight's pod. I guess we've kind of got Ecuador as like our favorite kind of dark horses now. But no, thank you guys for joining me tonight. Babs, Tops, Sean, obviously you've been amazing. We've talked over a couple of obviously quite good World Cup moments that happened tonight alone, and it's been a pleasure. So, on behalf of the listeners, keep on listening out for all the daily content from the guys as well. It's coming thick and fast, so yeah, don't be switching off. But yeah, on behalf of us again tonight, peace.
Peace. Podcast Network.